I'm Kevin Kelly. This program is Live and Local. And my guest today is Mark Rubel, who runs something called Pogo Studio in downtown Champaign. They do a lot of recording for a lot of people and a lot of production work as well, and we'll be hearing from Mark and a nice sampling of some of his work on today's show. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Piece called Harlequin by Cécile Chaminade, played by pianist Peter Jacobs on FM 90.9. It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. My guest today is Mark Rubel, who is, and we were just discussing, what is he exactly in relation to Pogo Studio, owner, operator, producer, blah, 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 the whole works.
That is true.
Mark Rubel equals Pogo Studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. What a pleasure to be here.
Well, I thought of you some time ago. I think when I had learned that you recently started to teach at Eastern Illinois University.
Yes, after having been at Millikan University for 5 years and having taught recording through Parkland College since 1985.
And those, both of those relationships continue, or just the Parkland?
Just the Parkland.
And so I thought, you know, so many people go in and out of your studio playing all different kinds of music from Champaign-Urbana and not. And I think the first I encountered you was on somebody's recommendation. You recorded the what was then a very small version of the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra. It must have been 15 years ago, something like that. That's the first I remember hearing the name Mark Rubel. And your mom was a great benefactor of a lot of people for a long time. She's gone, isn't she?
She is. Much yeah. Beloved and much missed.
Yeah, very much so. And I did have the chance to meet her on a couple of occasions. So why don't you just give a general introduction? What is Pogo Studio?
Pogo Studio is a medium-sized professional recording studio that is currently in downtown Champaign. Started it in 1980 with some partners, and these days it's just me. And it is a pretty nice facility, large wooden rooms, high ceilings, and a lot of nice equipment. A lot of it is vintage, which is a nice word for old, but the older recording equipment in many cases sounds better. So we have hundreds of microphones and a lot of really nice instruments, and have been recording daily since 1980. It's just been such a treat to be in Champaign-Urbana all this time because there's such a wealth of musical talent and so many wonderful people and so many different kinds of music here. And it's, you know, part of my career has been proving that you don't have to move to L.A. or New York or Nashville to do well and survive as a recording engineer producer. Most of my work is local and regional, but we also have people come from as far away as the U.K. and New York and California and Florida to record here.
Are you from here?
I was born in Princeton, New Jersey when my father was at Princeton. But I've lived here almost all my life. My father was a mathematician at the university, and so I went to Southside School and Uni High and the U of I. So I've been here almost all my life. It's a wonderful way to live in a kind of a different life when you stay in one place, which a lot of Americans don't do, and you're able to actually see the community change and people change. And at this point, I'm teaching the sons and daughters of people who took my class early on. So it's a very interesting experience and a wonderful, almost literary experience to be able to be in the same town for a long time and see the plot unfold and people change and things intertwine.
And how does that make you feel when you're teaching these sons and daughters of
luckily, it just makes me laugh. Mostly, it's also part of the interest, and it's very funny and interesting to get to see how similar they are to their parents and how dissimilar they are. So it's just part of that whole experience.
What got you into recording?
I've always been interested in music and technology. I was one of the kids who would take their parents' radio apart when they would leave and then have to put it back together and not have too many parts left over when they got back. And I guess when I was in bands, I was sort of the guy who would organize things and put the gigs together and that sort of thing. And I've always been interested in everything. And tried to get a true liberal arts education here at the university and study as many different things as I could. And they've all come in useful in this career because it's a career that pulls together so many different aspects. There's business and art and technology, architecture, acoustics.
The architecture.
Well, acoustics and the sound of rooms are very important to what we do, especially in recording acoustic music, of course. But even with rock bands and that kind of thing, the sound of a room makes a big difference. And so you end up learning enough about acoustics when you're designing and building facilities to try and make them sound good.
Did you build your own space?
I designed it and helped build it.
So you weren't necessarily doing all of the hammering?
Not all of it,
all of that
no.
Stuff. I can't remember when I've been in it. I was in it maybe once or twice, and that was many years ago as well. Have you made modifications over the years, or pretty much it's a big room that has served multiple purposes?
The recording room is pretty much the way it's been since 1985 when we moved to this location. And we moved from a very, very small house in Urbana, which was this turned out to be a bad acoustical choice. It was about 20 feet from some very active train tracks. So that wasn't a great idea, but the playing room is similar to the way it was when we first installed it because we got lucky, and I really like the way that it sounds. It's relatively large as recording studios go. We also have a big stairwell connected to it, and we can put microphones in there for a bigger ambience that we can control.
Hmm.
However, the control room has doubled in size somewhere along the way, and that's partly because I teach recording classes through Parkland College there, and I have 15 students at a time.
So they need a little space to work. You mentioned playing it when you used to play in bands, which you still do,
actually. I still do.
What kind of bands have you played in?
I've played in all sorts of different bands. I was in blues bands. I played with a classic blues artist named J.B. Hutto. I played in country bands and all sorts of different jazz bands and so forth. But in 1980, the same year we started the studio, some friends of mine and I put a band together as a scam to get free pool passes to the IMPE pool, the intramural pool for the summer. We called the band Summer Schlock, and the idea was we were going to only play 50, 60 songs that had the word summer in the title. The show culminated in our guitar player skateboarding off the high dive into the pool with his guitar, which culminated in our getting banned from the IM pool.
The guitar was unplugged.
It was
at that
unplugged.
Point, I hope.
Yeah, although the lifeguards did go in after it, which is really a bad idea if you think somebody's being electrocuted. But some people saw us play and they thought it was funny, and they asked us if we would, play their parties and bars and so forth. And we decided, well, we'll keep doing it as long as it's fun. And it's been 29 years. The band's called Captain Rat and the Blind Rivets, and it's still really fun, so we keep playing.
And you play what in the band?
I play bass guitar, and I'm sort of the resident idiot who jumps around and tells jokes and wears funny hats and so forth. We just played in Westside Park the other night.
Well, that's you with the funny hat.
That is me.
Okay. I've only seen the band once, I'm sorry to say, at one of the 4th of July ceremonies. And I remember, and it was at quite a distance.
Yes.
And I saw some guy in a funny hat bouncing around. So now I know. I feel better informed.
Yeah, moving targets are harder to hit.
Although you want to be careful when you're around fireworks in case somebody wants to try. You brought along let's back up and say for our listeners that who are just tuning in, we're talking with Mark Rubel, who is head of Pogo Studios, in downtown Champaign, a recording and production studio. They've been around since 1980. And Mark, you brought a sampler disc of quite a number of things here representing an idea of what you do in there. So why don't you introduce the first one for us?
Well, the piece that we played at the beginning was called Ballad for the Knife Thrower's Daughter. It's a guerrilla parlor ensemble, which is a tango group locally. They don't exist anymore, but it's one of my favorite recordings we made.
I own this recording.
Do you?
As a matter of fact, yes, I do.
Lovely.
So when I saw that on your list, I thought, that should be fun. I haven't heard it in a long time.
Yeah. So it's a lovely piece. And a wonderful instrument called the bandoneon, which is a kind of an accordion. Turns out to be difficult to record, but it's a beautiful sound. And at least one of the members is in the group Decifonato, and we're getting ready to make another record this fall, Brazilian music.
And we may be getting to those later on the list as well.
That would be lovely.
So the Gorilla Parlor Ensemble, that, by the way, is spelled G-U-E-R-R-I-L-L-A, that kind of gorilla, which makes it probably even more interesting. Ballad for the Knife Thrower's Partner. Is that correct?
I think that is correct.
Okay. On Live and Local on FM 90.9. A group called the Gorilla Parlor Ensemble. Gorilla as in fighting types of people, as opposed to the ape creature. Music called Ballad for the Knife Thrower's Partner, and played here as an offering by Mark Rubel, who did the recording. That's a Champaign-Urbana based group that isn't around anymore. And heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Mark, you said that was one of your favorite recording projects. What made it so?
I guess it comes down to my philosophy of recordings, which is I try to have the recording process serve the music as much as possible, and in term, as opposed to the technology creating the music so much. And when you have beautiful sounding instruments like that, it's wonderful to be able to try and bring everything out and present them as well as possible and try to light them. One of my favorite groups of recordings are the Mancini recordings, just because everything sounds so gorgeous, all the acoustic instruments. And it's something that I try to listen for when I'm doing that kind of acoustic recording. Although I'm glad that I'm able to record every possible kind of music there. No matter how much I love any particular kind of music, one of the things that makes the job not a job is the variety of people and styles of music that comes through.
You also said that the bandoneon was particularly difficult to record. Why is that?
It's a wide-ranging instrument in terms of frequencies from bass to treble. It has a very particular timbre that you have to capture in the right way. It moves around while they're playing it, and so trying to keep the volume consistent is important. And also it makes a fair amount of mechanical noise, a lot of clattering and clacking of keys, and so it turns out to be hard to capture.
So how do you solve the difficulty?
I used a stereo microphone because the instrument is actually stereophonic. The sound comes out in different patterns depending what notes he's playing, and just try to sort of use the bandoneon itself as a baffle against the clacking of the keys, to put the instrument between the microphone and the keys.
So in the case of this particular group, was everybody mic'd?
Everyone was mic'd, and that's a live recording in the studio.
And there were how many in that band, do you recall?
I don't recall.
Five or six, something like that is what I seem to remember from the pictures anyway, and remembering who was on the list. How do you decide, I mean, this is a really wide open question, but how do you decide some of these miking questions? I mean, let's be specific in this case, when to spot mic everybody in the group and when to either use a few or maybe sometimes just one for a smaller group or a larger group?
It's a matter of communicating with the artist and trying to find out how they want to present what they're doing. You'd think that the important part of being a recording engineer or producer is the technology or knowing the knobs and you know, the techniques and so forth. But beyond that, I think the most important skill is communication. And if I were to condense the job of what a recording engineer producer does, we're trying to get the music that is in someone's head out into the world for other people to enjoy and possibly even buy. And so that's usually done in concert with the artist. There are so many different ways that we can present the music. You know, a lot of it, of course, depends on style. You know, if we have a symphony orchestra, we're not going to put 100 microphones, you know, a microphone on each player and then try to balance it later. But it all depends, and some of it is just according to how we're feeling at a particular time. Some of the recordings I brought are done of groups that we would normally use multiple microphones, where sometimes I'll use one or two or three, because we're trying to capture the essence of a moment and the essence of the music. Because of the way that we hear and the way that we experience things, sometimes capturing them in a simpler way is truer.
We have a couple of classical excerpts next, both of them with the Eastern Illinois Symphony Orchestra. We may end up playing one or both. The first one is with a choir, which I'm guessing makes things more complex when you have orchestra and choir in what I presume was a big hall.
Yes, it's recording the Dvorak Hall in our fancy new $65 million art center that Doudna Art Center in Charleston, a beautiful place, and we have wonderful equipment there. In a case like that, recording a group in that way, it is very much up to the conductor and director, in this case, Dr. Richard Rossi, because the microphones are not able to pick things up very specifically. So generally, we're going for an overall picture of what's going on in the room. We will occasionally put a spot microphone, a single microphone, on something that needs to be highlighted, like a harp or maybe a soloist or something like that. But it becomes a matter, usually we have an array of microphones and then that we just have to move around until we achieve the right balance, just really using the laws of physics. We try to get the things that we want quieter farther away and to place this one array of microphones in a place where it will capture things in a balanced way. It turns out that even though it's uses simpler technology than a lot of the multi-track recording that I'll do, you know, it's very complicated with rock bands and things where we'll have 100 tracks of things. It's actually probably more challenging to record classical music and to try to get it balanced, both in terms of all the different parameters that occur in the music, the frequency balance bass to treble, the spatial balance left to right and front to back, and the dynamic balance from soft to loud. It's very challenging.
So this excerpt we're going to hear now is by John Rutter, I think you said.
That's correct. It's called Praise Ye the Lord.
Eastern Illinois Symphony Orchestra and one of the mixed choirs there.
That is right.
Conducted by Richard Rossi on Live and Local on FM 90.9 and, to the point of this conversation, recorded by Mark Rubel of Pogo Studio. Symphony Orchestra and Choir, led by Richard Rossi, Praise Ye the Lord by John Rutter, as recorded at the Doudna Fine Arts Center in Charleston by Mark Rubel of Pogo Studio. And we've got another clip of the Eastern Orchestra of Music by Elgar in just a moment. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, and my guest today is Mark Rubel. Today's programs are made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign, offering ground and whole bean coffee purchased from farmers using internationally recognized fair trade standards. Mark, sometimes when you're recording acoustic large groups, such as you were talking about, such as we just heard, and then you were talking about the difficulties of that, do you multi-track them so that you can adjust the balances when you go into the studio? You mean you hope for the best as you're listening and set up the microphones, but then when you go in, you say, well, this didn't work so well for that one, or...
We do, but it only applies in a limited way. Lately at Eastern Illinois University, we've been using what we call a Decca tree, which is a set of four or five microphones set in a kind of star-like pattern. And then we'll use what we call outriggers, which are farther out to capture musicians towards the outside of the group. And sometimes we'll have ambient mics or room microphones and a few spot mics. So it does get captured multi-track, but except for the spot mics, which are close to the instrument, they all pick up in a general way. So we can make things a little wider in the stereo field, or we can make them a little bit more ambient, but it's difficult to rebalance things.
So you could put a microphone near, say, the woodwinds or the brass in the orchestra, but it wouldn't change the balance of the trumpets necessarily,
correct,
for example.
Yeah, and we, you know, the goal with classical music recording is to have the recording technology be as transparent as possible. As much as possible, we'd like to transport the listener so it's as if they were in the room, sitting in the perfect spot in the room, and they could hear everything that was going on. So we have to be careful that we don't end up with things out of balance where we have an abnormally close or loud spot mic'd instrument or something like that.
Well, why don't we hear a little bit of Nimrod, which is the probably the most famous of the Enigma variations by Edward Elgar. We'll hear a little bit of this anyway. Again, it's the Eastern Symphony led by Richard Rossi, here on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
well, we're finding that we have so much music we'd like to sample for you here on Live and Local today, and so we'll come out of that. That was the Nimrod Variation from the Enigma Variations of Edward Elgar, played by the Eastern Symphony Orchestra at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, a live recording in concert made by Mark Rubel, who teaches at Eastern now and also continues to teach at Parkland College, as he has for many, many years. Mark Rubel runs Pogo Studio in downtown Champaign. What's the challenge of a live recording?
One of the challenges, of course, being the audiences, depending on the time of year and the health of the audience and how many, crying and screaming children we have and so forth. But it's, there is also some added magic to that, the interaction between musicians and audience. And so there, the almost all the classical music recording we do, and a lot of the jazz recording we do, whether there's an audience there or not, is done live. And actually, even in the studio, I tend to, with other types of music like rock and roll and jazz and so forth, I like to record it as live as possible because I feel that you get the feeling of musicians playing together in the room as much as possible. Plus, it saves time and money in the studio.
Well, yeah, there is that. how do you decide who to record? Is it solely they come to you and say, will you record us? Or do you ever go out to groups and say, I'd really like to work with you?
Generally, they come to us. And I actually do very little promotion or advertising of the studio. It's mostly word of mouth. But somehow we've managed to stay very busy for 29 years.
Have you found it has picked up over that time, or have you leveled off at some point?
I've been really busy recording since 1980.
Which is a great testament to what you're doing.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I'm thrilled not to have to get a real job. And it is a great pleasure to be able to work with so many interesting and different people and with so many different kinds of music and art.
Well, if you were doing a lousy job, you would find that your clientele probably diminished over time. I think that's how that usually works. So congratulations on being around so long. And can will be for much longer. Our next selection, before we go to our next selection, I have to do a little job here as part of this program called Live and Local, which is tell you some of the local live and local performances you can go to for the next couple of days. And we'll sneak into Wednesday, I think, because it's pretty light for the first part of the week. The Decatur Municipal Band is giving a concert tonight at 7 o'clock. In Central Park in Decatur. That's a free program. Timber Train is a group of... do you know that group at all? I'm trying to remember if they are bluegrass or what kind of music they play, but in any event, they'll be playing it at the Dockside Cafe at Kickapoo Landing in Kickapoo State Park in Oakwood. That's tomorrow evening at 5:30. The Craig Russo Latin Jazz Project, who are on your list, by the way, I see here, is performing in Champaign at Turnberry Ridge Wednesday evening at 6:30. And Craig Russo, I'll be talking with later today, as a matter of fact, on the phone, and we'll get him on the next couple of shows. The Peoria Municipal Band is performing Wednesday evening at 7:30 in Glen Oak Park in Peoria. And the Illinois Chamber Music Festival at Illinois Wesleyan University starts on Wednesday. There's a lot of recitals in connection with that. Wednesday evening's recital is at 7:30, and they're all in Westbrook Auditorium on the Wesleyan campus in Bloomington. Those are some of the things going on. And every once in a while, you can go hear a concert by the Champaign Urbana's premier lesbian feminist chorus called Amazong. And they are our next selection. How did you hook up with the Amazong group?
I'm friends with Christina Berger, who founded the group 19 years ago, 18 years ago. And I think I've recorded every concert or people who work for me have recorded every concert they've ever put on. What a joy. What a wonderful group and a great opportunity for people. They accept singers of all abilities and play music from all over the world. There's just some beautiful moments that we've been able to capture. It's really been wonderful to get to be associated with them for so long.
And what's this selection we're going to hear?
It's called Deep Peace. It's a traditional Gaelic blessing set to music by Bill Douglas, one of my favorite things we've done.
This is a recording made by Mark Rubel, live in concert at McKinley Presbyterian Church, I imagine.
That's correct.
Amasong, led by, this is Megan Smith at this concert. Setting of an old Gaelic poem, I guess, text, Deep Peace, as sung by Amasong, directed by Megan Johnson Smith, recorded by Mark Rubel at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. Mark Rubel of Pogo Studio with us on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. The show is your connection to local music, and we're on every weekday from 12 to one. Not quite sure who my guest is going to be tomorrow, so hopefully we'll know that before tomorrow arrives. But I suspect one of them will be Craig Russo of his Latin Jazz Project, who happens to be one of Mark's clients. And we hope, actually, to see if we can have them performing on the show sometime before they have an August gig. And we'll see if we can make that work. Toby Twining is one of your longtime clients, I guess. Somebody who used to be in Champaign. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Talk to us about Toby Twining and what interests you about him.
Toby is a fascinating person and makes fascinating music. And I'm so pleased to be associated with something which is a kind of music that has its roots in Renaissance music and so forth. But we've done things on this recording that have actually never been heard before. It's a legitimately new kind of music. And when you say new music, a lot of times you might associate that with dissonance and 12-tone music and so forth. But this is a sort of the new frontier, I think, of new music, which is ultra-consonant music. It's just intonation music.
Which means what?
That means music that is acoustically in tune. It's perfectly in tune, as opposed to most of the temperaments that we have in our culture, which are kind of a compromise between something that is in tune and something that sounds in tune. And Toby studied here at the university, which is where I met him.
He studied
at the University of Illinois. And he studied with Ben Johnston, a figure of my youth, who friends with my parents and so forth. And then moved to New York and did a lot of music for modern dance, and has put out a couple of records. One was on RCA, and this record was on Cantaloupe, which are the bang on a can people. And this is the Latin Requiem Mass, and it's just a very interesting piece. It's mostly in seven, in a meter of 7/4. It is in the original Latin, but he's able to build these very complicated chords of 12 different voices that are in just intonation. So you get chords that should sound very dissonant, but because it's in just intonation, they're very static. They don't move. They don't have vibrato and so forth. There are all sorts of interesting moments in this CD where the entire group will modulate just by a few microtones. And it's very affecting somehow, especially to musicians and so forth. Many of the people who sing and were associated with this record have perfect pitch, and the producer Mark Johnson has microtonally perfect pitch. So if you sing a note, he will tell you what note it is, and if whether it's 37 or 39 cents flat. In order to get singers who can sing with that level of accuracy, I had to go to New York and record this. So we recorded in a friend of mine's studio there. This was all recorded in 2001. Toby was supposed to fly to Champaign to mix the record on February 11th, 2001. And obviously that didn't happen.
You mean September 11th?
That's what I meant, September 11th. The day, September 11th, 2001. And that did not happen. So I ended up mixing it here with remote advice from the composer and the producer. This was on the long list for Grammys in five categories, including Best Engineered Classical.
No kidding.
Which is funny because it's a very non-classical, in terms of its actual technique. This was multi-tracked, recorded one piece at a time. We didn't use any of the auto-tuning technology that we have now, so all the notes were actually sung. But it was done very deliberately and carefully, mastered at Sony in New York.
It's called In Paradisum, In Paradise, from a mass by Toby Twining, performed by, what do they call it, the Toby Twining Project or something like that? What sort of name did they give it?
It's really just credited to Toby.
Toby
Twining.
As recorded by Mark Rubel from Pogo Studio here on FM 90.9. We'd let that one play out because there's so much fascinating singing and music happening in there, and an incredibly virtuosic performance by Toby Twining and colleagues in his piece In Paradisum from his Requiem Mass in Paradise here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, recorded by Mark Rubel of Pogo Studio. Mark's my guest on the show today. Coming up in about 11 minutes, we'll have a weather update at 101, news headlines from NPR. And at 106, Julie Amacher is in with classical music for the next couple of hours, and then more after that. Mark, when you mentioned very early in the conversation that your studio has a lot of vintage equipment.
That is true, and a vintage recording engineer as well.
Increasingly vintage, aren't we all, right? When do you use that, and when do you use the new stuff, and why?
I try to use primarily what sounds best, and much of the older stuff sounds better, partly because a lot of it has vacuum tubes in it, which tend to be a good-sounding audio technology. So as far as microphones, I like to use older microphones. Our mixing console was built in 1970, and it is a wonderful sounding board. And I use a lot of our signal processing is older stuff. It's just built to a higher standard, built to military standards, built to broadcast standards, made to last 50 years, which much of it has at this point. So I use more of a vintage front end. But although we have the reputation of being a vintage studio, I almost never use tape machines anymore. Almost all of our recording is done to hard disk recording digital systems. So it's really, it's a hybrid system. And I use the digital systems for the recording because it speeds the workflow. It allows me to do whatever we need to do quickly. We have many fewer limits than we had with tape machines. It has fewer technical limitations. It's also doesn't take the kind of level of maintenance and upkeep. And also the media, these days tape is very expensive. And for clients' budgets, it's a lot easier to record digitally.
Sure. Well, and that's probably why a lot of the vintage equipment went by the wayside, because it got to be more expensive and to produce, well, now even more expensive to produce because not that many people produce it. And for all the reasons that you just gave for actually using it. Our next I'm looking at the list of things you brought, and I'm looking at the time that's left. I'm thinking, yeah, I'd love to hear all of this stuff, because a lot of these people are either names I've heard of and don't know anything about, or don't know anything about and haven't heard of and would like to know something about. But who have we got next?
This is a friend of mine named Scotty Ligon. He had a band in Peoria area called the Hedersons. And this is one of my favorite things we ever recorded. It was never released. It's a little bagatelle, just a little piece. This is his story about a guy who works in the photo studio at Sears.
And it's called Look at the Birdie.
Look at the birdie, look at the birdie, give me a smile. Your mom has gone for a while. Say cheese, pretty please. Look at the birdie, look at the birdie, welcome to Sears. Here comes your mommy, here comes your mommy, now look at your smile, you are a beautiful child, now say cheese, pretty please, look at the birdie.
Well, you can tell the name of that piece, Look at the Birdie, and I'll let Mark Rubel remind us of who did it.
That's Scotty Ligon, L-I-G-O-N. He's one of the most talented people I've worked with. He writes songs that sound like they've always been there. There's a successful band called The Redwalls, and he tours with them as their keyboard player. But as far as I'm concerned, he should be as famous as Randy Newman or Paul Simon or somebody like that.
I don't want to talk about Randy Newman. Because I'll start going off. There are just so many people where, at least to me anyway, it's inexplicable how they got where they are. And then you have these local talents, small talents, who are so wonderful. And then why don't they get anywhere? And a lot of it's backing and et cetera, with things we know. My guest on Live and Local today is Mark Rubel of Pogo Studio in Champaign, downtown Champaign. If somebody wants to get involved with you, either do some recording or do some production work, because you do a lot beyond just recording people.
Yes.
How would they get hold of you?
Well, they can call the studio at 351-8155, or they can email us from our website, pogostudio.net.
And I appreciate you coming on the show today. We're going to have you on another time.
I would love to. Thank you.
Because there's so much music that it would just be, it's just be a fun break from, you know, things that are happening coming up, which is usually the focus of this show, just to sit and listen to music because we can. And just from the music you've chosen and from listening to you talk about, as you've said several times, this isn't really a job, because it just doesn't feel like a job, which is the sort of job everybody would like to have. I'm guessing that your real motivation for doing all this stuff is because you just love music.
That is true. I really do. And I love musicians and getting to work with them and getting to be part of their world for a while and be part of their, you know, each band, each group is sort of like a little miniature tribe, and you get to be, you know, part of their culture and part of their inside jokes, and you listen to what they listen to, and you live with them intensively for a period of time and try and help them and give them something that will help them, and then, you know, polish them up and send them off, and then often a year or two later they come back and we make another record. So I've gotten many wonderful friendships from this, and many great experiences being able to travel around. I do a lot of workshops and conferences and peer, you know, training people and doing demonstrations and so forth. So it's really just great.
Why don't you introduce our last selection, which I think we decided was Duke Special?
Duke Special, not a local artist. As I said, we do have people who come from all over the world to record here in Champaign. This group is very popular in Northern Ireland, where they're from. And the group came over from Ireland. They asked me to line up some local musicians to play on the record. So the very talented Tom Painter, one of the most wonderful musicians around here, played on it. Popeye Kurtzinger plays harmonica. The Duke of Uke plays ukulele. And on this song, which is called If I Don't Feel It, my wonderful friend Michael Meadows plays a very interesting, a very unusual instrument called a marine trumpet, which is neither marine nor a trumpet. It is about a 7 foot tall, I can't remember, two or three stringed musical instrument shaped sort of conically. It has resonant sympathetic strings inside the body, and you play the harmonics only with a bow. It's a medieval instrument, I believe, and I think the idea was that it was unseemly for nuns to be seen blowing into things. So if they wanted a trumpet-like sound, they had to use a stringed instrument instead. And they found a couple of these in ancient convents, and Michael, being a musical instrument inventor and builder, built one for himself, and he plays it. You can hear it at the end. There are some interesting harmonics in this song, but it's a very interesting project. Duke Special, their previous record went platinum in Ireland. I'm pretty sure this one will go platinum as well, so that'll give us our hopefully second platinum record to hang on the wall, because we got to record the country group Rascal Flatts earlier this year. But it's very interesting. The music was written in Ireland. It was recorded in Champaign, Illinois. It was mixed and overdubbed in London and Paris, and it is on a major label, V2, which is a subsidiary of Universal, the biggest record company in the world.
So congratulations all around on that one.
Thank you so much.
And Mark Rubel, again, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Duke Special, If I Don't Feel It, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Tragic spreads its wings to sail away, leaving beauty in my life to support me and leave these shadows behind. Turn back the tide.
Called Duke Special, If I Don't Feel It, here on Live and Local. A quick look at the weather. This afternoon, a heat advisory is in effect. Actually, it goes until 7 p.m. for most of our listening area. Otherwise, partly sunny, hot, and humid. A few showers or isolated thunderstorms possible, the high around 90. Tonight, partly cloudy with a chance of a stray shower or thunderstorm in the evening, the low 70. Tomorrow, sunny, hot, and humid. A slight chance of isolated thunderstorms, high 93. It's WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. Still, I know it's